Episode number 201 with Phil Hellmuth. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. This week, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Phil Hellmuth. 15 WSOP bracelets and counting. The last time we had him on, episode 147, he was at 14. He's got one more now. One more towards his prediction of 24, and one more to my prediction of 32. So, good luck, Phil. We're rooting for you. Phil just recently won a heads-up tournament at the Borgata. He basically won six heads-up matches in a row and took down the title in almost 40K, so congratulations. This was a really fun interview for me. Phil's just a stand-up guy. We talk about recently the Super Bowl, get into sports betting, his new book, Hashtag Positivity, and I delve in and pick his brain about what's his secret for just, you know, when he gets down to heads up at these final tables, just maintaining a clear mindset? And how is he able to just consistently close these things out? In my mind, he's the greatest tournament poker player that's ever lived. It's neat to kind of get inside the mind of a poker savant, you know. We got a review for the podcast from Simon. Simon, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. Simon Eklishall from across the pond in the UK. Great podcast. Been hooked for about a year. Great content. Thank you. Thank you, Simon. Appreciate that. If you guys want to leave a review on whatever outlet you listen to, Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, whatever it is, YouTube, do so, and I'll read it on the air. Been getting some questions on day trading. I've got some emails and tweets asking me about that. I'm going to save that for next week. Mike and I will get on and we'll shoot the breeze and we'll try to tackle your questions on day trading. So if you guys have any questions about it, tweet them at me and Mike and I will talk about them on the air. Before we get to Phil, I want to thank our sponsor, Tournament Poker Edge. It's in the name. Gives you an edge in tournaments. You can watch fun, instructional videos, learn from the pros, videos of member hand history reviews, tournament strategy and theory. Go through the videos. Check them out. There's free ones. Just check those out. It doesn't cost you a dime. There's about 20 hours of them. When you join the club, you'll get access to almost 2,000 videos. It's a lot of fun. We all just get together and talk poker tournaments. When you join, save yourself some cash. Use the code HUPMONTH. HUP quarter or HUP year, depending on how long you sign up. I just do the annual membership and then I'm good to go. Don't even have to think about it. Study and learn with other people that are just like us. It'll be the best thing you've ever done for your tournament game. I guarantee it. Alrighty, now without further ado, Phil Hellmuth. Phil Hellmuth, thank you for coming on the show.
All right, my pleasure.
Yes, yes. Last time we talked, you had 14 bracelets. You have 15 now. Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, that was really special.
Yes, yeah. You're one step closer to your goal of 24.
Yep.
Yes. And I predict 32. I think it would be amazing if you reached 24, and I just think it would be an act of God if you got to 32. You're just plugging away, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I missed the World Series of Poker Europe for the first time in my career, and I just wasn't excited about going to Europe. You know, I've had some small issues about, you know, traveling. It takes a long time to recover. And so I've decided, you know, that I will indeed go to this World Series of Poker Europe. But I think that, you know, I'll take a sleeping pill, is the plan, on the plane, you know, like a really Ambien, like one that just knocks me out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I need a breathing machine, so I have sleep apnea. So for me, you can actually run your machine on a first-class flight. So I'll do that.
Okay.
And hopefully can show up somewhat unscathed. Usually takes me 5-6 days to adjust, you know.
With all the jet lag, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I go to Asia. Well, I've been to Asia a bunch of times, but I went last year. And it took me almost a week to kind of get on schedule.
It's tough, you know, and people don't realize, you know, I mean, when you're flying east, it's a lot harder than flying west.
Oh, why is it?
Well, because you land at, you know, say 1 p.m. over in London or Paris or wherever, and that's actually, you know, 3 a.m. or whatever. So it's a little harder, they say, to fly east.
Okay. You know, on your 15th bracelet, I saw an interview that you did, and you mentioned that Kathy, you called your wife and you said, you know, I'm just not really feeling it. I don't know that I want to play. She talked you into it.
Yeah, she pushed me into playing that one. So did Mike Matusow and Brandon Cantu. And, you know, the last time I had played in a half an hour or 20 minutes where they raised the blinds tournament, mm-hmm. I had final tabled it. That was about 2 or 3 years before. And so now I'm entering the same format. And, you know, but I mean, I had a herniated disc all summer.
Oh, wow.
And for anybody that's had that, you have, you know, you start to get sciatica, that's pain, you know, kind of shooting down your leg.
Yes.
Very painful, very tough to deal with. I mean, I was really upset if my room was too far from the elevator, just extra steps I had to take. Somehow no one at the World Series of Poker noticed that I had it, and I didn't talk about it ever because I didn't want an excuse.
Yeah.
You tell everybody I have sciatica, that's an excuse not to win. So yeah. I told nobody I had sciatica. And so, you know, I did my best to kind of mask it when I was walking through the back hallways, you know, and not limp too much. And, you know, but I mean, I skipped more $10,000 buy-in tournaments than I've ever skipped at the World Series of Poker. It was just easy to take a lot of days off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so then, you know, this event, I was really thinking about just skipping. And then, you know, I kind of got motivated at the last minute, popped in there and immediately ran my chips up. I took up kind of a bad beat.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to 100,000 in chips, I lost like maybe 140, but I lost like 50, 60, 70 of them with like, I don't remember the beat, but I don't think it was a flip. I think it was a bad beat, but, you know, something like jacks against ace 10, I think. And maybe it was a flip, but I just felt like, oh man, come on,
yeah.
You know? And then I thought, all right, just try your hardest. And then you just have to hang in there. And then somebody moved in with queen nine suited in the small blind, and I had tens in the big blind, and it held, you know?
Nice.
And I was back up to chips, and, you know, I needed a few more hands to hold. But I remember someone raising and me just calling with jacks, and then someone moved in from the big blind and with ace seven offsuit, this guy folded, I called, and this guy, would have flopped a set of threes or deuces or whatever.
Ooh.
Probably taken me out because it was a 10 high flop. And instead I won a huge pot that propelled me into the chip lead. And I hung in there, you know, I went to the final table and I just didn't win very many hands for a long period of time. I had a guy on my right who was he just went berserk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and look at the video, he just started raising every hand, re-raising every hand. It's like, and you know, and it gave him a massive chip lead for a minute, you know, but he put himself in unfavorable spots. And, you know, when his ace deuce or whatever lost to two tens, he lost a lot of chips and he busted.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was down to three of us. And then the other, my left started going crazy three-handed, moving in every hand. And so I never really had a hand to make a stand. Hung in there. I do remember that, you know, with about 2 minutes to go before the dinner break,
mm-hmm.
I had nothing in the small blind. And, you know, and I just thought to myself, you have to make the dinner break. I never stall.
Yeah.
And so it took a while to, maybe it was a minute and 45. I took a while to limp in and then. He took a little while to move in. And now there was like a minute left. I knew I was folding, and I thought, you know what? I would rather just, you know, go to the dinner break and have the full hour off. And so, you know, so I stalled, just wanting to make it to the dinner break and where I could kind of reset.
Yeah.
Just hadn't won any pots for a long time. And then finally the bell went off, and I told the guys, hey, you know, it was 15 seconds left, so they didn't mind. So then we left, and first hand back from dinner break, ace five on the button. I moved in. I had an ace, and I had about, you know, I don't know, 10 big blinds, something like that. The guy in the small blind who'd been going crazy called me with kings.
Ooh.
And so now for the first time, I needed some help. It came an ace and a five, and now we were all tied up. It was like 3 million to 3 million to 3 million in chips. We were all very close now. And then I just kind of hung in there, and you know, the guy on my left, he was making it hellish for me, just making all kinds of crazy moves, crazy moves, crazy moves. And finally he got picked off, and he's out. And now, you know, we're heads up. At that point, there had been no deal as far as cash goes.
Yeah.
And but we talked, we were three-handed, and I'm like, shh, I can't accept that. It's way too little. I had too low of chips. And so he's like, I need a break. I think his plan was to ask me for a deal.
Uh-huh.
I need a break. And so when I walked in the door, the VIP door, a lot of us walk through the back hallways of the series if you're there every day and you've earned the right to do that. And so the minute I came out of that door, he was waiting. He's like, here's the deal I propose. We'll make a save. We'll play for like $100,000 or whatever it was. And I was like, sounds reasonable, you know, I guess. I mean, whatever. I didn't care that much, but it was also nice to know I made at least a number. So
yeah.
Sometimes you make a financial deal. And then he and I just battled, it seemed like, for 2 hours.
Wow.
You know, just fighting hard. And the blinds finally, maybe 3 hours, maybe 4 hours. It was a long time. Finally, the blinds got so high that when he moved in, I had 10 big blinds with pocket threes.
Okay.
And I'm like, man, I hate to put my money in with pocket threes.
Yeah.
But it's just, this is one where the math dictates that if I fold here, I raise the next hand, and then he re-raises. You know, I mean, he could all of a sudden get right back up to 15, 20 bigs. You have to take your shot to win here. You
yeah.
know? So I called him. He had ace nine offsuit, and I'm over at the monitors with my wife, and Brandon Cantu was watching me. And you watch the door card, which you see just a second before everything else, was a nine.
Ooh.
And immediately when that I saw that nine, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be tough to win. Nine's a bad card. At least if an ace comes up, could be ace, deuce, four, right?
Yeah, you might have a shot for a wheel, yeah.
But nine in the door, but before I had a chance to, you know, I mean, it's just so quickly, they spread it. There was a three behind it. Nine, three, deuce, and everybody's celebrating. I'm like, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
I lost that same one during when I was playing heads up in one of the shootout events where you have to win your table.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy got up to walk away, and then they dealt him a running. And so then with a six on the turn, I believe it was, then it was over.
And it sealed
it. Then I could celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was pretty cool. Now I've won my 15th. Wasn't really expecting it. Had been in a lot of pain all summer, and you know, there's been times I was expecting bracelets and didn't win.
Yeah.
And so this was sweet. And then Maury Escandani comes over and he's like, "If you like, we'd like to congratulate you live on ESPN in 18 minutes." And I was like, "I like."
Yes. Yes, sir. Done.
So I did, you know, 10 minutes of interviews, and then I went straight to the ESPN set. And, you know, it's nice, too, when you get to wear all your logos.
Yeah.
So I got to wear all my logos, and then, you know, and I just posted a picture on my Twitter yesterday. Someone posted a picture of me.
I saw that.
Holding the bracelet up.
Yeah, that's a cool picture.
Live on the ESPN break desk. You know, with Nick Schulman and Ali Najad. And so it was kind of a blur. And then, you know, part of me wanted to kick into commentator mode. So we talked about me. And then it's weird sometimes when I'm doing the ESPN stuff, they say, Phil, you don't talk about yourself enough. And I'm like, that's not true. And they're like, no, really, we need you to. So I knew they wanted to focus on me for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't wait to get to the deserving players who were left in the main event. There were two or three tables left or something by then. Or maybe there were still 100 left. But I wanted to talk about those guys because they deserved to be talked about.
Yeah.
And so we segued over and started talking about those guys as soon as we could. But it was just a great moment.
That's awesome, man. And you were able to do it with your back. How's your last time we were talking about your sleep and the sleep apnea? Did you get the chili pad?
We had one delivered because of you.
Nice.
I did not because of you. Yes. And then unfortunately, I never pulled it out of the box.
Oh.
I've been sleeping better, which is great.
Okay.
And but I do have it, and now my wife and I switch rooms because we're down in the downstairs now because we're having our house just kind of redone.
Renovated.
And so, you know, and I've been sleeping pretty well, which is nice.
Okay. Which one did you get? Did you get the king size or the single or what?
I think I got the single.
Okay. That's what I got. I'm telling you, man, this will change your life. If you think you're sleeping good now, you'll sleep about an hour less with this machine.
Nice.
It's a bold statement, but it's true. Yeah.
Well, I'll pull it out at some point. I mean, you know, the nice thing is when you feel like you're sleeping well, then you don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And why mess it up?
You're like, I don't want to screw this up.
It's been nice. I think I've been sleeping well for 8 months.
Cool.
And I had a surgery on the back.
Okay.
In early August.
Okay.
I went in quickly. I talked to an NFL, former NFL guy, Ronnie Lott.
Mm-hmm.
Was playing basketball with us one day. I just went over to watch and support the guys. And he's like, I had the same thing. And I'd just been diagnosed. I was walking around all summer undiagnosed because it was the series and I didn't want to have time to go in and have x-rays.
Yeah.
So now they knew what it was. And he's like, I had that for a year. My biggest mistake was not getting it operated on.
Okay.
So my concierge doctor is good at it. So literally 3 days later, I had the operation. And I was perfect the next day. It was crazy.
Wow.
And I'll never forget the surgeon saying to me, it went exceedingly well.
Nice.
And I was like, thank God. And then it was crazy because then he wanted me to walk a lot. So I was walking already a couple thousand steps the next day, 5,000 steps 2 days later.
Wow.
And I'm at full health right now, which is great. And I'm very thankful.
Good. Good. I I saw your tweets on the Super Bowl. I as well put some bets in. I came up a few $100. My brother was a little bit more fortunate than I. He made about $2,000. I'm trying to interpret your bets here. What is the 1,000 for the Patriots 1 HTD?
First half touchdown.
Okay.
We lost that one, unfortunately.
Okay.
Where we did well is we had Sony Michel to score the first touchdown.
Okay.
At 6-1.
Nice.
And then we had some crazy, like, I just thought Sony was going to, I just thought they were going to run the ball a lot because the Rams had the worst, you know, rushing defense in the league.
Yeah.
And, I also bet Tom Brady to throw less than 37.5 passes. That was a side bet with Cantu.
Okay.
He threw 35,
okay.
I think.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
But, I mean, from what I understand, the sharpest bettors are on the prop stuff. And I didn't understand this till I hosted the national championships of sports betting.
Yeah.
And I talked to a lot of those guys. And I was like, you know what? And so I made all these prop bets and five guys followed me. So we ended up with about 50,000 bet with a bookie who was staying with us.
Okay.
You know? And Phoenix, who flew out from Madison, Wisconsin. And
wow.
There was a big sweat. We had a real shot. The Sony Michel at 16-1 was going to cost him to be MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Was going to cost him somewhere between 32,000 and 40,000.
Wow.
And they were really sweating that hard. Now, at the end of the game, Sony Michel breaks a run from the 9-yard line. If he would have gotten into the end zone, then I think he gets MVP.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But instead, he was stopped short. Or even if he scores a touchdown, breaks a 30-yarder or a 40-yarder instead of that field goal, we think he gets the MVP because he was in there.
Yeah.
So he just needed another touchdown. Then we could say, all right, he scored 2 touchdowns and had over 100 yards.
Yeah.
And that's between him and Edelman.
Yeah. Edelman had over 100, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We bet Edelman. I thought Edelman was going to get a lot of catches. I think he's a stud.
Yeah.
So we had him at over 6.5 catches or something. And, hey, I think he had that almost in the first half.
Yeah.
You know.
The odds on Bovada were 10-1 for Edelman MVP. I think Brady was like +125, so it wasn't. But yeah, I did another one for James White. I thought they might he might get some carries because of the bad rushing defense for the Rams. I was wrong though; he only got two, and I took him at 3.5. So, oh well. But the other ones I got for the Patriots winning, I put a bet in before they played their last playoff game. And so I got them at +333. So that was nice. That was cool.
I went public saying I like the Patriots, and I did a long interview on why. But we also liked the under.
I took the under as well. Yes.
There was no sweat there. I mean,
yeah. No.
You know,
after just the first half, I was like, okay, 3 points. Nice.
I just assumed there'd be a lot of running, and the Patriots did run the ball the first five plays, I think.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah, I assumed exactly the same. I'm starting to get more into sports betting. My brother does it semi-professionally, and I'm learning a lot of nuances about it. I play fantasy football, and I've cashed 4 out of 6 years. It's a lot of fun to me. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Well, playing the national championships of sports betting was so much fun. 10K buy-in in New Jersey, held by DraftKings. And,
okay.
You know, for me, I kind of was the host. So, I think I had everybody started with $5,000. But here's the trick. You keep that whatever balance, you keep that at the end. So you get to keep the money.
Oh.
And I think that, believe it or not, $12,000 cash. So five goes into the prize pool.
Okay.
And five is what you bet with.
Okay.
And so, 12,000. In order to finish the top 20 out of 400 or 500 players, I think 12,000 cashed.
Okay.
You know, for like 10K, plus you got to keep your 12.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that there's a lot of people that got into that contest for $2, $5, $10.
Oh,
and so,
okay.
You know, their wives got to be putting heat on them. You know, if they double up, they're like, bring that 10K home, you know?
Yes. It's no different than satellites into the main event.
Correct.
Okay.
So people aren't necessarily, so me, I had 6,400 heading into Sunday and you could only bet on. So I took the 30-1 shot, the biggest parlay.
Yeah.
I took San Diego and under, loser, loser, Philly straight up, and what was it? I think the over or the under on that game too, but I lost the first two, but I bet 6,400 on a 29-1 shot.
Wow.
And so if I win, if that hit, then I was going to finish in the top three in the contest. Third place was 250,000.
Okay, yeah.
Now, Brandon Adams is such a genius, and he was there. He probably would have blocked me from winning if my parlay hit because everything was kind of published.
Okay.
So he would have probably – he bet the same way I did. I would have probably finished second, but second was what, 500,000 or something, 350,000. So I gave myself a shot to win 150,000. So, I mean, here's a funny thing. I don't think I bet more than 100 or 2 on a – 4-team parlay in my life, and here I got 6,400 at 28-1. But I gave myself a chance to win. If Brandon didn't cover that, then I win a million plus I get to keep the 100 and whatever it is, 50,000.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. You know, I rewrote. We're kind of segueing here into what I want to get into, but I wrote that as part of, you know, I got my 2019 goals now. And then on the side of it, I've always had up on my mirror or in my goals, I'm a professional poker player. But I added to that this year and I put at the top, I'm a professional gambler. And then under that, I am a professional poker player and I'm a professional day trader. And I think kind of keeping the I'm a professional gambler at the top keeps my mind a little bit more open to. Just when I see an edge and there's money to be made, just because it ain't poker doesn't mean I can't bet it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm excited. You know, positivity hasn't sold as many copies as I'd like to see yet, but that same thing happened with Play Poker Like the Pros,
Pros
and that
yeah.
became a New York Times bestseller.
Yes.
So I still feel like, you know, I have some really cool stuff coming up, and I think that that book is, you know, I think I have a chance to influence millions of people's lives with that book, hashtag positivity.
I believe so. I believe
Eight
so.
life tips.
I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. I got my goals for 2019.
Well, tell the folks, you know, I mean, one of the things, one of my chapters in my books is, you know, write down your life, write down your yearly goals and tape them on your bathroom mirror. And that's where you got the idea to do that for you, right?
Exactly. Yes. In your, I got it in your autobiography, and then this one is. It's such a slick book because I feel like what you've done is you've just really gotten it down to the nitty-gritty. You've basically taken like Think and Grow Rich, The Magic of Believing, The Magic of Thinking Big, you know, those books, and you've just narrowed it down to exactly what you need. I mean, I have it in my hand now, and it's 80 pages, I think, and it's like yeah, you just get right down to the nitty-gritty. And the biggest one that I've gotten out of it is putting the life goals up there. Because I even have a second copy that I take with me because I travel so much. You know, whenever I go, I can just put it up on the mirror there where I'm at, and it's just a part of my routine. You know, I put it down there when I put my toothbrush on the counter, and it's right there. And so for this year, I got I want to make $250,000 in earnings this year. I want to get certified as an IFR pilot so I can fly through overcast and clouds. I want to buy another house, and then as far as like time off and vacation, one trip per month for 4 to 5 days, one trip every 3 months for 2+ weeks, one trip per year a month or more. And so, you know, these may be a little lofty, but I think it's kind of important to aim a little high. And I mean, what's that? Yeah, you know, and so I got four of them here. I think if I did not write these down, my odds of accomplishing any one of them would be pretty slim. But by writing them down, if I accomplish even one of these throughout the year, I'll be completely happy. And if I can get two of them, I'll be stoked, you know?
You know, it's a beautiful thing writing down the goals. And then when you see them, they talk about putting stuff into the universe, and you see them every day.
Yeah.
And whether you know, whether you, it becomes, you know, as you know, because you've had the goals, you've had your yearly goals on your bathroom mirror now for 9 months or something. You have. And then, as you know, a lot of days you don't even notice them, especially after the first month or two, you're just brushing your teeth. But your mind notices. Some of your unconscious notices.
Yes.
And so, you know, you kind of like, it puts you, and so you're using all facets of your mind, you know, to help you create what you want the most. Most people don't know exactly what they want. You know,
Yeah.
they know, oh, I want this or I want that, but they're not thinking about it all the time.
Yeah.
And so in the morning to have that there is huge. And so that's the one, you know, that a lot of people are will tweet me and say, hey, check out what's on my mirror, my 2019 goals, my 2018 goals. And so that feels good. And, you know, Tony Robbins was telling people to buy my book in his classes. And you're not going to believe this. I just looked. Someone texted me, and it was Tony Robbins. So
That's awesome.
he left an audio message. You
Oh, that's
know,
awesome. You
he and
got
I
his
are,
tweet pinned to the top of your profile. That's great.
yeah, he and I are going to be getting a little time together soon. And so that's pretty cool for that to come in during this interview. And as soon as we hang up, I can't wait to hear his audio message. But he was telling people in his classes every day to buy my book. And that's the highest honor. And really, what is my book, Positivity? It's just eight life goals, right? It's so simple. You know, one. And so, one, tape your, you know, what, two of them are tape your blessings to your bathroom mirror and tape your yearly goals to your bathroom mirror. And another chapter is write down your lifetime goals. Another, so, you know, there's kind of like eight simple chapters there, but it's amazing to me that Tony Robbins would be telling people to buy my book. It's amazing to me that he just texted me. You know, I wrote a big article on him and put him on the cover of a magazine a couple months ago. What I didn't know about Tony is that he's fed 360 million people. He's given 360 million people meals. And that stems from when he was a kid and somebody stopped by and gave him a Thanksgiving meal, him and his family. And he's providing water for like 2 million people a day. And so all you hear about Tony Robbins is
motivational.
His great,
yeah.
Correct. But then then people have been telling me that he's taken it. He's trying to single-handedly get rid of human trafficking. So here's a guy who's had a profound impact on the world. And he left a message for me a couple months ago. And it was like, Phil, I'm going to be here. And I was just like, he sounded tired. And I thought, man, here's a guy that works almost every day to change people's lives.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, he doesn't have to do any work. I mean, I think he's a billionaire now.
Yeah.
But he's out there still working, still changing the world. And so I'm looking forward to getting a little bit of time with him.
Right on. Good. Could you ever imagine that this would be your life when you were a little kid and
bad at school.
And you know, the only thing you could beat was Monopoly?
Last night I was invited to some trip that, you know, was the most insane thing I've ever heard of in my life. And I can't really discuss the details, but I was just like, I mean, I had to call my friends and say, pinch me. Is this real?
Is this real? Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you know, I mean, I get to hang out with some amazing people, you know, I mean, it's, but wow, you know, no, I couldn't have imagined this.
Yeah.
I thought big, you know, if you read my autobiography when I was in kindergarten, I was already decided that I would be rich and famous,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
And,
the fortune teller.
And so, you know,
as jazzed as you feel about, talking to Tony, that's how I feel when I have you on the show. It's like, I'm a great sports fan and I'm here with Tom Brady. So it goes both ways, my friend.
Well, thank
cool.
you.
Yes. But,
no, it's quite it, but thank you for that.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we had Alexander Fitzgerald on the show last week, and he gave you a great compliment. He said he described there's three different ways to play poker, and he said there's prayer, perfect, and primal. And he says prayer is just a wing and a prayer. You're basically just gambling. Perfect is the guy that's got GTO memorized, but he fails to recognize that the guy is 60 years old and only plays aces and kings, and he reships his tens because that's the GTO play to do. And then he said there's primal, where you will just do anything it takes to win the tournament. And he said that's how you play. And I agree. And I feel like your greatest strength at the table, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just recognizing what weakness is in that game right then or with those players and just exploiting the shit out of it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, about 10 days ago, I won a heads-up tournament.
I saw that.
Now, I haven't played many heads-up tournaments. I finished second in the NBC heads-up championship. Everybody was shocked in 2013. They said, all the young guns are going to get there. Well, it was me and Mike Matisau in the finals. and then I played the heads up for the belt, where I played who the kids say are the two best heads up players in the world, Jungle Man and Doug Polk. And I beat them back to back to win that title. But that was only four people. So it's been a year and a half, 2 years since I played. Well, we had 64 players in this one with some great players in there. And that one, that's where it really can come out and shine, because when you're playing a heads-up match and it lasts 2.5 hours, it's best 2 out of 3 format. That gives you a lot of skill, and that's a lot of time to read weakness in your opponents and make the right calls or make the right raises,
yeah.
You know, or make the right bets. And so I think that's winning. That was pretty cool for me. And then I cashed in the WPT. You know, I took a really bad beat late, and I finished 100th out of 1400, but not proud of that. But if my queen's beat is Jack 8, and it came deuce 4-7 rainbow, and he was just bluffing off. And if that hand holds up, I'm going to probably have 900,000. I'm going to be in the top 5 in chips with 100 players left, with a real shot at a WPT.
Yeah.
And even still, I had a couple hundred thousand left, and I blew it. I mean, I just blew it. It wasn't horrible if you looked at the hand I played, everybody would say, of course you had to go broke there, but not me.
Yeah.
You know, not me, and not 2 minutes before the break. That's the worst time. I should have looked up at the clock. And really, all I had was top pair, and I turned a flush draw. And so, but yeah, to circle back to what you're saying, there is something about if you know the other person is weak or strong, there's a lot of latitude and a lot of leeway then on how you can act, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we're talking about is white magic, and it's weird. Sometimes I feel like I'm surrounded by a lot of magic. You know, I think the universe has really been good to me, which is a weird thing to say. I used to always say the universe has been good to me, and my wife would be like, "What are you talking about?" And I'd tell her, I see reality more clearly than a lot of people. She'd be like, "What are you talking about? My wife's a genius." And all of a sudden now these sayings, which I was using in the 80s, are a lot more in vogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I understand. I've been blessed, you know, and I'm very thankful for that. But when it comes to just poker, it's the reading abilities can separate you. And I think primal is a good word, right?
Yeah.
Because primal means, you know, I'm completely on my instincts. Primal means, so I really like that description, primal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a good one. I like it. Prayer, perfect, and primal.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, primal also includes maybe setting people up, using other people's tendencies against them, right?
Yeah.
So if I might let a guy bluff me, I'm the only guy in the world. I think in those heads up matches,
mm-hmm.
I think there wasn't one match, maybe one, where I won most of the pots. Almost every heads up match I played, there were some of them where they won 70% of the pots, some where they won 60% of the pots.
Wow.
And that's the way I roll in heads up.
Okay.
Give it to him, and then you just decide, all right, I have ace five offsuit. I'm not folding this, no matter what it comes.
Yeah.
And there's other times. I mean, hopefully you pick up a hand or two where you can set somebody up. You have queen jack suited, and it comes a queen, and they just bluff off a bunch.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it comes to real desperation, and then, you know, sometimes if you're just not hitting anything, you might just have to make that move yourself. But, you know, part of that is part of being primal, if you will. I'm embracing that word. is using other people's tendencies against them.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're going to fold all the time, then I'm going to bluff you all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're going to try to take every pot, then I'm going to show you two or three laydowns so you're not going to believe because you were bluffing me. But you're eating those potato chips now.
Yeah.
You know, those potato chips if I'm bluffing Phil.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't wait to tell your friends, I bluff Phil, I bluff Phil, I bluff Phil. Well, how'd you do? Well, I lost. You know.
Well done.
But I bluffed him like five times. I feel so good about myself. And I wonder if sometimes when they're going home in the taxi or driving home, if they say to themselves, I wonder if Phil, you know, I mean, I wonder what they're thinking. You know, I bluffed Phil four times.
But then when I moved all in,
bluffing him the fifth time, he called 3 million with bottom pair. What happened? You know, that was the time I knew he was weak, but he somehow knew I was weak.
Last time we talked about, you talked about that you're great at new games. You know, you can instantly see the edge. It probably comes from when you were a kid and playing so many different games. You know, you gave the example of open-faced Chinese.
Yep.
And you said then after about a, you know, once the game is introduced, you've got an edge over the field instantly. After a few months, everyone else kind of catches up. How often do these games
come up? Or passes me in the case of Sean Deeb and Jason Mercier.
Okay.
You know, they invented a new version of a game. You know, when Open Face came, they had already played for a couple weeks, and I was like, wow, they're making glaring mistakes. So I sat down and won with them, and the next day won with them. And then the next version came along. Well, what they did is they literally played thousands of hands heads up of the next version. And so when I faced them at the Fantasyland version, I didn't make the adjustment, and I lost 80,000 once to them.
Okay.
And I lost 55,000 once. I remember it was 2013 because I stayed up all night right before one of my heads-up matches, which was stupid. And I still managed to finish second in that tournament. But, you know, I lost 50,000 to Sean that night, too. So they clearly became better than me, and I couldn't understand why I always had, like, you know, three straight deuce, 3-6 in the back, you know,
yeah.
And these weird hands. I'm like, that can't be right. But of course it was right. So yeah, I mean, I think when new games come along, the minute introduced, I'll have an edge. Something just kind of like, I'm pretty good at, you know, seeing what the right lines are, but
that's
you
the
ask
part
me
I'm
how
curious.
How often new games come along, you know,
yeah.
We introduce Badesi, these games.
Yeah. Do you
but
get
then,
like,
you know,
3 a year, or is this like once every 2 years or 10
yeah,
a year? Or?
Yeah, but I'm not there to take advantage of it. So, you know, so if we introduce Badesi, so in other words, I'm just never in Vegas playing in the cash games.
Okay.
So I can't really take advantage of it. It's a good skill to have, but it's not something I use often enough, you know.
Okay. Well,
there's a new game out that everybody's been playing.
Which one's it?
Well, all the poker players are shouting at the screen right now. It's so-and-so.
There's like 400
but I haven't
people right now
that
are just
that.
Screaming, this is the name of the game.
Yep. And we're having our first tournaments ever in that game. There's a World Series of Poker tournament for the first time in that game. And the players seem to love it.
Okay.
But anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
So, I can't use that skill as often as I'd like. It's just an interesting thing that I've noticed about myself.
I'm trying to think of how to ask this so that you can articulate what exactly it is that you do. Maybe heads up is the best example. Like, what questions are you asking yourself to find your edge against that player? Like, what's running through your brain, you know, as you're sitting there going through the hands and, you know, how do I?
Well, I actually just play completely straight up. I'll play the hand exactly the way I think it's supposed to be played. I'll play straight up. And then they're the ones that have deviations. How do they win their first three matches? They bluff, and then won a coin flip, you know?
Okay.
And then, so how did this guy win his matches? There was a guy like in the fourth round who just was as tight as I was. And so it was destined to be 3.5 hours of just waiting for hands,
okay,
hand against hand. He had amazing patience. And I found out this guy always, he finishes in the top four a lot in heads up tournaments. I found out later.
Okay.
And I was impressed with that, but he was using my strategy of basically playing really tight. And then so that was working for him. So you let all the people that think that heads up poker is about moving in every hand, you know, we just wait and just boom, they're just dead. Now they're going to get there sometimes, right? We're going to finally have ace queen and we're going to call when they have ace jack. And sometimes they have king jack and you're only 2-to-1 favorite,
yeah,
you know, or you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
those situations come up all the time. And so when I'm playing heads up, I just basically kind of place just straight up, and then I see which way they're deviating. And then if they're deviating, it's annoying when they're trying to win every pot.
Yeah.
That's annoying for me. But those guys I get too. So a guy like that might, you know, win 65% of the pots for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll just let him go. And everybody's like, well, how can you win the match? Well, there's no antes in heads up, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he wins, but then, you know, he can't help but overextend himself going
and
for a pot.
And that's when you may be only be winning 30 or 35% of the pots, but the ones you big, you win are much larger than the ones he did.
I'm winning, think of it this way, I'm winning big pots with big hands.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's winning small pots with small hands.
Yeah.
I mean, which is pretty accurate, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Right on. Well, thank you, Phil. This has been a lot of fun. If you could give one golden nugget to our listeners, I'm going to throw it out and say that it's hashtag positivity. It's an awesome book. What do you think out of your 8 suggestions in there is the most important? Is it putting the goals on the mirror, or the blessings, or the pyramid? Which?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the goals on the yearly goals on the mirror is number one alongside of the forgiveness.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm showing people in the book Positivity a three-step process for forgiveness.
Yeah.
Very simple three-step, and no one's ever done that. And so, you know, so the name of that chapter is Hate Hurts You.
Yep.
And, you know, and so for anybody that reads my book, read that, because, you know, if there's someone you dislike in life and you read my book, you can take my suggestions, one of which is, you know, think one of which is meditate and think of that person, you know, and send love to them. That's just one of the three suggestions. But it's amazing for me how I've been able to clear. So basically, I hate no one in life.
Yeah.
Now, for, you know, I haven't had the extreme stuff of, you know, some of the people that have had family members do really bad things to them. But even those guys, I have friends like that, and they've used my suggestions, and that's helped a lot.
That was a powerful section for me, because I wrapped up a divorce about a year and a half ago. And when I read that, it's only 2.5 pages here, but when I read that section, it really hit home for me, and I did what you suggested, and it worked. It was within about a week of doing that, without even really realizing it until now. I'm taking a step back and looking at it. I started dating again. I'm open to relationships, and as far as you know, the dating world has gone, it couldn't have happened until I forgave my ex. And so anyhow, it's a very good section in the book. I like it.
No, I mean, it's the hatred builds up in people's minds.
Yeah.
And then they're using their time whenever that they think of that person or see that person, they're squandering their energy hating.
Yeah. And you're just projecting this shit out into the world, and other people can feel it, you know, even if they can't articulate what it is.
Right. And you might see someone who you hated, and you might be then ordering a coffee and you're still seeing daggers, and the person behind the counter is like, whoa, is this guy all right?
Yeah.
And so it affects other relationships with people. And then you might snap out of it and smile at the girl, or you might just be still stuck in the hatred. And so and just pay the bill and get out of there and be brusque.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just no need to do that. And so, yeah, it's just a simple no-brainer to anybody who's wronged you and anybody you hate to just get rid of that hate. It's amazing then. It's almost like they know. And like you said, all of a sudden, a week later, you were dating.
Yeah.
It's amazing how these stuff has reverberations and effects. Like, it's like an earthquake, but an earthquake doesn't just strike once. It kind of keeps going for an hour or two. And in this case, you know, when you're clearing that hatred, it's going to have effects on you months later.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Right on. Well, thank you, Phil. If you guys want to check out all things Phil, go to philhellmuth.com. Get his book. It's on Amazon. We'll put the link in the show notes. I can't recommend it enough. And he's also got his other book, Poker Brat, Phil Hellmuth's autobiography. A great read. There's a section in there with the Sergey Baranov that I listened to at least a dozen times. It's such an awesome story.
Freaky story.
I love that,
that one. Yeah.
That's great. But thank you for your time, Phil, and you have a great rest of the day.
Have a good one.
All right, brother.
And good luck to all the listeners out there.
Well, who's the second coolest guy in poker, huh? Positivity, hashtag positivity. I cannot say enough about this book. I've read it several times. There's a bunch of, the pages are folded and the book is about falling apart and there's highlights everywhere. But I can tell you that this mindset of positivity is, it works. I mean, when I look at my own life, I remember as a kid, my mom, dad, me, and my little brother were living in this little tiny trailer. It had a wood-burning stove, which was our only heat source at night. And, you know, there was 3 feet of snow outside. And I remember my dad just piling the wood inside that thing and then closing the door. And that would keep the trailer warm at night. And specifically, I remember him coming home one night and he had a blanket. And I was so fucking happy because I wasn't going to be cold that night. That's what I came from. And now I am a fire captain. I have my own plane. You know, I play poker. I travel all the time. I've been to 30 plus countries, and it's because of this writing down your goals, which Phil goes over in the book, hashtag positivity, and the brilliance of just putting this on your mirror so that you see it every morning is, I mean, you couldn't make it more simple. I've been writing down my goals for years, and I never thought of putting it on my mirror, but what I would do is I'd write them out in detail, write them in the affirmative, like in the positive, and I would read them every morning and every night, and I've been doing that for years, and I don't think it's a coincidence that what I write down in my goals are things that I accomplish in my life. You know, it's taken me over 200 episodes to get to this, but whatever you're doing right now, stop. So if you're vacuuming the house, if you're washing the car, if you're driving, pull over to a gas station so that you can stop and write this down. This will probably be the most important thing you've ever heard me say on this show. And ask yourself this question. What do I want? Say it out loud. What do I want? What is it that I want? What do I really want? If there was nothing stopping me, what would I want more than anything else? And something will come to you, and take out your phone and write it down on a note on your phone, or if you got a piece of paper right there, write it down on a piece of paper and put it on your mirror. That's it. Okay? Just one sentence, one thing, one word. It doesn't matter what it is. Just write it down and then put it on a little sticky tab on your mirror. And what will happen every morning and every night as you're brushing your teeth and you're staring at that, is you'll start to think of other things that could add to it. For example, one of the recent ones that I did was I'm going to purchase a new house. I just put new house on the mirror. Well, after about a week of staring at that, I thought, well, maybe I should expand on this a little bit and start writing down what kind of house I really want. So now the note has expanded. I've taken that one down, put another one up, and it says 2 to 3 bedrooms, 1 to 2 baths, a nice backyard so I can do gardening. The house is well insulated. You see what I'm doing? I'm describing it more in detail, so it's making it more real in my mind. And it's just there in the background. I see it every day and every night, and my subconscious is thinking about it, and that's the kind of house I'm going to get. I've done this with everything. I've done this with promoting at work. I've done it with poker. I've done it with flying. It just works. Okay? So do that. Tweet them at me. I'll tweet mine out at HUP podcast, and I look forward to seeing it. We'll go through these together. Speaking of having a good mindset and all this positivity, you want to play your A game? Warm up your brain before a session with Elliot Rowe. That's who I'm talking about. That soft-spoken English linguist. Get a warm-up routine before you play poker. And what better way than to listen to Elliot, talk to your subconscious and tell it to play the best that it is capable, to your full potential. By listening to these tapes, for the type of game you're about to play, you will rise from that 10-minute nap and be on your A game, completely focused. Imagine playing your A game all the time. No distractions. The only thing you're thinking about is you and your opponents, and everything else is in black and white. He has his Leak Buster package. I've got this one. Well, actually, I have all of them. But the Leak Buster comes with bankroll, downswings, folding when you're beat, letting go of mistakes, poker anxiety. Check out his free 7-minute tilt buster. The links are in the show notes. Or hit up headsuppoker.poker. Use the coupon code HUPOKER. You will score yourself a discount. You will kick back some to the podcast. And we'll keep this train running. HUPOKER. You can get Phil's book, hashtag positivity. There's a link in the show notes. And by using that Amazon link, you'll kick back a little bit to the podcast. And all proceeds go to a science scholarship that I give out at the end of the year. Thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Wake up every single day thinking about how can I change my life? How can I stand on a stage with the giants? I start started this on homeless on the side of a Turkey Hill gas station. And I told myself, I will not die here. I said, how can I build a $1 million business with no money? A conscience in my head spoke to me and it said, purpose. They said, when you work for your purpose will begin to work for you, and dreams and beautiful things will start to manifest. And I truly believe this. As long as you believe in that very gift that you have in the bottom of your stomach, that fire that burns, that dream that wakes you up in the middle of the night and wakes you up and have you screaming to the sun, rise so I can go after this dream. That is the very thing that you should chase every single day. If you chase this dream with consistency and you believe, your booking and your calendar will fill up.